Okay. I am calling this regular board meeting of the Geologist Licensing Board. The board will provide an opportunity for public comment during the meeting. We will ask you to unmute before public comment to allow anyone who would like to speak to provide us your name, so we make sure to call on you during the public comment period. As a courtesy, we encourage participants to mute their mics or your phone if you called in when you are not speaking, to reduce the background noise when others are speaking. One challenge is remembering to unmute your mic or your phone when you are speaking. Also, for board members, to help us capture information correctly, please state your name when making comments. This meeting is being recorded. Thank you. So, Sherry, if you would take the roll call, please.
Yes, thank you. Eileen?
I'm here.
Jim is absent. Kathy?
Present.
Casey?
Present.
Carla?
Present.
Tom?
Present.
Okay, and then we're going to move on to staff. Deborah?
Present.
Darla?
Present.
Dar?
Present.
Rick?
Here.
Kim?
Here.
Elizabeth? Here. And we have Mike?
Here.
And Julia?
Here.
Okay, thank you. And Elizabeth's here. Okay, Eileen, back to you.
Okay, great. Thank you. So now we're going to take a look at the order of the agenda. So if you take a couple seconds to look at it again, and if anyone has any comments or additions, I'll need a motion for that, for approval.
Can we make a correction to the minutes? Sherry, it looks like Jim Struthers has joined us.
Yes. Yes.
I have one correction. It's minor.
Okay.
It's not the hydrology symposium under 2.3. It's the hydrogeology symposium. Minor detail, but they're different fields. Just saying.
My apologies. Okay.
Look, it looks like Casey has his hand up.
Yep. Casey, you're muted. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I was just curious under 7, the Assistant Attorney General's report, if there was going to be additional discussion regarding the term engineer in any process that case has been made where we had a summary last time. So I didn't see any sub bullets under there. If we could get an update on that, that would be great. Or if it's more appropriate for next time, that'll work too.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments, requests? So I'd like to hear a motion for approving the agenda as presented with the correction of hydrology to hydrogeology.
This is Kathy, and I make a motion to approve the agenda as corrected.
This is Carla. I second the motion.
Any discussion? It sounds like the agenda is approved as the motion carries. Thank you. Okay, so next on the agenda is the approval of our minutes from the December 2nd, 2021 meeting. Again, I would need a motion to approve it as presented or any recommendations for correction.
This is Casey. I make a motion to approve as presented.
Is there a second?
This is Kathy, and I second the motion.
Thank you. Any discussion? All right. All in favor to approve, say aye. I think I forgot that before.
Aye.
Aye. Some ayes. Any nays? All right. Motion carries to approve the December 2nd, 2021 minutes as presented. Thank you all. Review of communications 1.4. So I'm going to hand it over to Deb.
All right. Thank you, Eileen. So I just wanted to let the board know, Sherry, can you move forward on the present on the slide deck? Okay. Thank you very much. So the agency has received an email from a licensee with a question regarding retired status and voluntary service on a public advisory board. So the board and the board's advising AG, we can't provide legal advice, but we'd like to have a brief discussion that might help provide some perspective regarding what are the appropriate roles for a retired Washington registrant. So the board should not say yes or no to this person's question. It's more for him to decide whether to serve on this advisory board and what is within his scope of authority as a retired licensee. We have reached out to Elizabeth and she is on this call. So if we have further questions for her or need further clarification, she is on this call. But these were what we had brought forward for the discussion. We were looking at the WAC for the retired licensee status, and this is found in WAC 308-15083, Section 2. And it addresses the question of how do I retain a retired status. So this talks about what you actually have to do and what are your privileges and permitted as a retired licensee. As you can see, you are able to retain your board issued certificate. You're able to continue to use the title geologist. You can also then use the term retired, emeritus. Any of those would be appropriate. You could providing experience verifications and references for individuals seeking licensure, that's allowable. Provide services as a technical expert before a court or in preparation for pending litigation or matters directly related to geological work you performed before you were granted retired status. And then serve in a professional capacity as a good Samaritan set forth in the RCW 3852-195 and 3852-1951. So performed in accordance with the 18220. So I think this is probably where we want to focus is, you know, professional capacity as a good Samaritan. The second paragraph of this, and I know it's kind of lengthy, I hope you had a chance to review before this meeting, but this is more of what are the restrictions of a retired licensee. And so as a retired licensee, you're not allowed to perform any professional geological work. And before we kind of move off of that, it's important to also understand that as a retired licensee, there is the ability to unretire. So if you choose to unretire and you want to do geology work after retirement, it isn't unallowable to reactivate your license. You would need to go through the process of paying licensing fees and reactivating that license. So with that in mind, if you're retired, you're not performing any professional geological work as provided under the chapter. You aren't able to apply your professional seal. So these are all things that make sense. You're no longer an active geologist, licensed geologist. Can you move forward, Sherry? And then third area that applies of retired licensee may or may not be found, which activities that do not require a license. So these are all the areas that you don't have to be licensed in to perform. So research, working in an academic institution, teaching geology, general scientific work, and giving testimony and preparation. So at this point, I summarized quite a bit. Elizabeth is on here so that she can help to clarify the areas that I skimmed over, giving you the cliff notes. You know, we had more detail on the board that this gentleman wanted to serve, but I think for a greater purpose, this is just a generalized conversation of what retirees could do in serving their community after retirement. So I'm going to open it up and turn it back over to you, Eileen.
Thank you so much. This is an interesting topic, interesting question. I just want to remind everyone that this is just for discussion purposes only, and that no decisions are going to be made as a result of our discussion. So let's start. It looks like Tom, your hand's up.
Thank you. I'm curious, is the difference between a retired professional geologist and a professional geologist basically just the keeping up with your license dues? And or is there, I guess I'm just curious, is, you know, kind of what is the threshold here? Is it just paying your fees, you know, and staying active with your license requirements? And if you're in a retired geologist, you get some sort of reduced rate. Some clarity for me there would be helpful. Thank you.
Elizabeth had her hand up before, but I believe that it is about not having to pay your dues. You're not paying your licensing fees as a retiree. There is no penalty when you go back to being active, as far as I read within the laws and rules. It allows you to retain that license status without going into a cancellation. So for instance, if you don't apply to retire your license, many professions, you would go into cancel status and that's it. Many professions would require that you start over after you go into cancel status. So this isn't a status that we see in a lot of our professions within BPD. This is pretty unique to geology. It does allow that you could activate again without going through the entire process of licensure. So I think that is a benefit to this status.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Deb. Kathy, your hand's up.
Yeah, hi. Could somebody enlighten us about Good Samaritan and what that actually allows someone to do as a Good Samaritan?
Yeah, that's what I was going to explain why I initially raised my hand was, this is Elizabeth, the Assistant Attorney General. The Good Samaritan is misleading because it's actually a very specific area that you can practice, and that is the under 3852, it's emergency management work. So it's work that you do in an emergency. It's not just generally being, you know, helpful to the community. So again, you would think helpful to the community, but that's not it. It's definitely the emergency situations. So, and I think that you don't really, this retired status doesn't give you much leeway. It doesn't really allow you to do very much. So, which concerned me, and that's why I brought in the things that you can do without a license, which was the second set of statutes or WACs that are, you know, below, because I think that actually gives you a lot more freedom than being a licensed, I mean, being a retired licensee, that you're pretty limited in what you can do in retirement status. So
Elizabeth, this is Eileen. I have a question. I can't say I understand, but I'm aware of the Good Samaritan rules, at least in other places, that might protect someone, for example, that gives first aid or CPR in case of an accident. How is it different for a licensee versus a non-licensee giving the same sort of emergency service? Or is the licensed person or retired licensed person somehow protected equally as someone who doesn't have or never has had a license that offers perhaps similar service?
Well, yeah, I think that if you're right, there is that overall overarching Good Samaritan law that allows you to go in and provide like CPR, like you said, or, you know, pull somebody out of a burning building or something like that. But this Good Samaritan work is specific to, I think the intent is it's specific to giving, acting as a geologist and giving professional advice. So I think no good Samaritan in general, unless they're a licensed geologist, is going to be giving geological work. So I think this is specific to if you're going to go out there and do and work as a geologist, you can do that in retired status in emergency management. So in these statutes, and nobody else would have the right to go in and act as a geologist in emergency settings, only licensed retired geologists. If that makes sense.
Thank you. So if we go back to the question that Mr. Wyatt posed to us in the first place, he's just interested in finding out whether he can serve on a particular board or commission or committee, those kinds of things. And so if we can maybe, if there's anything else to say about that, looks like Tom, you have your hand up.
Yeah, thank you. I really wanted to go to this notion of the third area of the law that talks about giving testimony or preparation and presentation of exhibits. How would that differ from providing sort of an opinion on an advisory board? I guess I'd be interested in counsel's perspective on that.
Yeah, so when I first looked at that, I thought, well, that does give you the right to give advice as a geologist. But I think because it's so specific and so limited, it's pretty clear, right? I don't think you could argue that it's beyond that scope. So had it said something like perform activities similar to that, I think you'd have more leeway. But the way it's written, it really is just specific to working with in the context of litigation. So it doesn't really give you that broader ability to serve on a board. But I do think that the area below allows people to serve on boards without being required to be licensed if they have the expertise that the board would want them. In this case, part of the reason that I had looked at the requirements of that board that was at issue is they have a couple different things they do. One is provide general advice, and then another is work specifically with a person in that local jurisdiction. I think it was Bainbridge Island. Work specifically with a planner and, you know, work up a report or something. So it was very specific. And also, I thought probably too specific for somebody who's in a retired status because they're actually working on a permit. So
thank you. That's helpful. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. So I actually see three hands up, but before I call on anyone else, I just want to mention that Mr. Wyatt is present as a guest and has his hand up. Mr. Wyatt, we do have a public comments section later under number 11, and staff, if we can be reminded at that time that perhaps Mr. Wyatt might want to have a chance to speak. So, but this is not the time for public comment, but we will call on you later. Thank you so much. So Rick, you had your hand up next.
Yeah, just a couple of points of clarification regarding Tom's question regarding the technical expert before court, that's specific to work that you had done, you'll know when you were licensed. So it's, you can't provide technical expertise in court on just any geological issue. It's tied specifically back to your licensed time. So that's a little bit unique. And the questions about Good Samaritan, actually real common. That's in a lot of our laws and rules. And oftentimes it's used because you don't have a license in the state. So it's almost like a reciprocity thing. You have a major disaster and somebody comes from out of state. But in this case, it would also apply to your retired license. So it tends to be real specific to a specific profession. We've seen it a lot with engineers when there's been earthquakes, things of that nature, and you need some additional structural engineer work in a community or something. So those are just a couple backgrounds on those ones.
I'm sorry, I'm going to go out of turn here, Eileen, but I think I beg to differ with you, Rick, a little bit, that I think the first part of the statute is as you describe.
Yep.
But the third part of the statute where it talks on number 8 is a little bit, okay. I don't think as specific. So just to clarify.
Yeah, I was looking at that earlier. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Looks like Rick, are you finished?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, great, thank you. Jim, looks like your hand is still up. Thank you for waiting.
Yeah, no problem. So it seems that serving on a board is something that geologists are retained to do. You know, it's not an uncommon thing that you contract with a board for an entity and serve in an advisory capacity on that and produce geologic work products. So the question I've got is, does the retired or kind of pro bono nature of this work on the board change that relationship that would require licensure for professional practice in that board setting?
Is this a question for council or just for in general?
It's a general question for people to consider. You know, it's
okay.
Could you kind of restate that? I'm not sure I followed what you were asking.
It's not an uncommon service for a professional geologist to sit on a board and advise them, whether that's providing a professional review of permits or designs or something like that. So the question I have is there something special about being no longer active or being retired that kind of puts it in this category of acceptable, even though you're not, even though your registration is not currently active? And it doesn't seem necessarily to be a clear distinction to carve it into a separate area of practice to me.
Thank you. Anybody else?
So I guess just to respond to that, if you look at the different things that you can do as an unlicensed geologist, I think if you are providing general information, like you just said, if you're serving and giving advice on permitting or something specific or helping put together a report, I agree with you. That's something that you would need to be licensed, have an active license. But if you're giving general, and I can't really see the specific items that you don't need to be licensed for, but like I said, general information, that's probably okay. But specifically, I agree with you, specific advice, you probably need to have an active license. That's kind of my take.
Anybody else have any more comments on this? Okay, hearing none, it's been a good discussion, and it's a good question. And I'm glad that we all had the exercise of going through this topic and learning a little bit about our own statutes and rules and about Good Samaritan work. So thank you. All right, where were we? We were at GAD. That was 14A. There's not a 14B, but we'll go with it. All right, moving on to new business, 2.1, election of officers. So this is the time of year where we elect new officers to serve on the board. And per WAC 308-15-010, the board shall elect a chair, vice chair, and a secretary. The secretary may delegate his or her authority to the executive director. So with that, I wanted to couch this activity under the guise of what is has been proposed in the draft charter, which we'll talk about later. And what that charter says is it sort of reflects what has been done in past years, but it's never been really written down anywhere. We've never had a policy or procedure or whatever, which states that we have a secretary, a vice chair, and a chair. The chair rolls off as a past chair, which isn't really a titled position, but the vice chair becomes the chair and the secretary moves up into the vice chair position. So we will be electing a secretary. That is how it is proposed in our draft charter. Is there any discussion or disagreement or whatever about this procedure before we actually do it in 2022? Anybody? Do you love it, hate it? Somebody raise your hand, say something, please. Kathy.
Well, I will add a complicating factor to this to think about. I think that's, as far as the charter goes, that seems very reasonable to me, especially since that's what we've been doing. But it seems like those positions of people moving into or up into the next level, those should be voted on as well. So it shouldn't be automatic. It can be nominated and then maybe approved. So that's my thought on the rolling up. But the complicating factor is in the case where the secretary leaves the board, you've got a vacancy, and so you don't automatically have a roll-up from secretary to vice chair. So you might need to add a little bit of clarification for that.
Kathy, did you find that not in the draft charter? Is that something that we are missing from the charter that describes how that happens?
I think I think it wasn't as clear. And so, for example, I'm currently secretary. I'm not going to go for a second term. And so you all need to elect a new secretary and a new vice chair, for example. So there could be some clarification, I think, in the charter.
Okay. Did you make those comments in the charter for us today?
I will.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else, Kathy?
No.
Okay. Casey, your hand's up.
Yeah, thank you, Eileen. I like how it's sequenced in concept and kind of maybe building on something Kathy was just remarking on. It then would kind of necessitate anyone interested in holding an officer position, identifying that in their first year on the board so they could be elected in the second year and serve secretary, vice chair, chair to serve out the remainder of their term. So in concept, I really think it's a great strategy. And it probably a hybrid approach like Kathy's talking about, where we do kind of need to have those as maybe the preset nominations, but acknowledging, depending on how people's terms line up with their service in an officer position, it's fairly restrictive if someone didn't identify in their second year that they wanted to start in an officer position, the way the terms are staggered and we rotate through, we might have a very limited pool of people to draw from to serve in those positions. That's my thinking.
Okay, thank you. Jim, your hand's up.
Yeah, I'm definitely with Kathy and Casey on this one. You know, I think it'd be preferable to have some degree of flexibility written in the manner that they're speaking.
Okay. With that said, I didn't receive any comments from anybody or anything in the draft that expresses what you're saying at this point in time. So when it comes time to discuss the charter, I don't know that we're going to be able to do much with it other than to send it back to you. And if you would please add these comments. So we haven't really, you know, Kathy, we haven't really done things traditionally in the last several years, at least since I've been on the board. We haven't. So there hasn't been a precedence really, and certainly not in writing. So I'm kind of at a dilemma here. Of what to do. Are we today going to be electing three people? Or are we, what's the discussion? What are our druthers here? Carla?
I mean, I agree with what everybody's saying. I think that this should always be a discussion, even if we have the procedure outlined in the charter. Maybe somebody doesn't feel comfortable taking on a chair position, so we should, you know, ask them or, you know, make sure that they are before we start. And I think the WAC requires that even though we have the procedure in the charter, we still do the election. We still have to follow the procedure in the WAC, right? Which is to nominate and elect the chair, the vice chair, and the secretary. So I think we have to do that, just understanding that Kathy's out, so we do have to elect all three.
Yeah, I'm not sure that the WAC says that we have to elect all three every year. It just says we have to elect any at any given time. I don't, you know, maybe Elizabeth, if you're still here, you are familiar with how often who all gets elected when. So really, it's just up to us, you know, and whatever we decide, I don't know that we need to rediscuss it every year with a new procedure. I think that we should settle it in charter and then just do it and then change it in charter if we have to. But personally, I don't see the benefit of deciding every year on a new procedure. I just will remind the group that this is how ASBOG and other organizations typically do this. The idea of bringing somebody from, I guess, the bottom up, if you will, is to give them introductory experience into a role as an officer. So that by the time you get to the point of being eligible for moving into the chair position, you've got some experience on your duties or what are anticipated duties. So I just need to know by a motion perhaps today, ultimately, what you guys want to do so that we can do it. So, all right, Kathy, thanks for your patience.
Oh, sure. So it is true that a lot of other professional organizations do this roll-up procedure, but they use that roll-up as a nomination, and they still vote every year. It looks like, according to the charter, the officer terms are 1 year, so that does require an election each year based on what's in the charter, at least as I read it. So I like the idea of the roll-up, but I think the vote still has to occur every year.
The vote for all three positions and not just the secretary. Is that what I'm hearing? That's what I'm trying to figure out, if that's what I'm understanding the group wants to do. So go ahead, Elizabeth, your hand is up too.
Yeah, so I would say I agree that typically other boards will have the roll-up, but will elect the officers. I think it's a little more complicated because you have the three and most boards just have a vice chair and a chair. And I think that's simpler. You know, every board can do it differently. You can do it however you want, but I kind of think it's almost simpler to just have the two and then have the roll up. The three is, it seems like you're voting a long ways ahead of time for, you know, that secretary and the fact that the secretary might not have a role. So other boards will have like, you know, committees where, like an executive committee where the vice chair, chair, and past chair will serve on an executive committee because of their experience. But otherwise, you know, the chair is the only one that has the role. And then the vice chair is like in a learning experience and can take over. But does the secretary have a role? Not really. So I don't know. My suggestion might be just try the two instead of the three. And you can change it. Now's your time.
Let me ask you then, Elizabeth. So it would take a rule change to do something differently. And we can certainly discuss a future rule change, which we could do within the next year or whatever, to eliminate secretary. I was understanding that it was in statute. And Rick, you can tell me if I misremember our conversation about this, but.
Actually, so the three positions are in rule, very simply stated as it's in the cover sheet here. It simply states that annually the board shall elect chair, vice chair, and secretary for the upcoming year. And it's tied to that this is the one meeting that is required of the board. So the board must hold at least one regular public meeting each year. So those are the two things that are tied together. Because it is in rule, if you wanted to change that, you most certainly could. I would say that all the boards that we support actually utilize a secretary, and the sole reason and the only time we've utilized secretaries in any of our boards is if for some reason your chair and vice chair are not available, the secretary ends up chairing a board meeting, which happens every couple years on some of the boards. But other than that, you're right. Our secretaries have not played an active role in administering the boards.
Okay, thank you, Rick. Kathy?
Yeah, I would echo what Rick said and others that, you know, the secretary position, at least on this board, I haven't seen there to be any need for it other than if we didn't have a vice chair and a chair present. And I'm not sure we'd have a quorum if we were missing that many people such that the secretary would have to serve because our board is so small. So I'm really wondering if we can work towards eliminating that position, actually.
And the one word of caution that I would have is you would still have a quorum if you're missing two members, especially if we ever were able to get back to having a public member on this board. And we do have one board that went without a secretary one year, and they were one of the ones that didn't have that ended up without the chair and vice chair. And so then we ran into a problem and having to go through a process to elect a chair pro tem for that specific meeting. It just added complexity to the meeting that doesn't need to be there if you have a secretary. So.
Okay, thank you for that clarification.
Yeah, little quirky things.
All right, Jim, your hand's up.
Yeah, I just kind of question whether there's actually any harm in having a secretary position that would necessitate a rule change in people's minds.
I think only in the fact that we have to elect a third officer every year that does nothing. And, well, you know, as Elizabeth advises and through her, you know, experience with other boards recommends that we just don't really need it. I've always wondered what the heck they do and nobody could ever say. So I made up something in the charter just cover our bases, you know. So
I'm sorry, Rick. I would not have said anything had I known. I should have let you speak first. I'm not making any recommendations because it sounds like Rick has had experiences where you do need a secretary. So I take my recommendation back.
So here's a question to Rick then. I mean, is this really that common of occurrence? You said it's happened once in how many years and how many boards, and the likelihood of that happening, you know, is it, what's going to happen? Is the board going to fall apart and disappear? No, it won't. I mean, like, if go for it.
No, I would say most of our boards have in, so I've been with the program for 9 years, working with multiple boards. And I would say most of our boards at least once have utilized the secretary as the chair because they were missing the chair and vice chair at a meeting. We only have one instance where a board didn't have a secretary. They failed to elect one year. Either that or I think the secretary actually had to leave the board, and so they were left with it open. And lo and behold, that was the time then that they ended with a chair and vice chair gone, and we sat for the first 15, 20 minutes of the meeting trying to figure out how to create a chair pro tem and who was going to chair the meeting to find the chair. It was just it was a kind of interesting adventure. Certainly, you can operate without the secretary. It's just been a convenience for the boards, and that's how they've operated. This board's a little bit unique in your terms are just 4 years, so it kind of complicates some of the rotations and things. Most of our other boards have 6-year terms, so there's a little bit more flexibility in folks kind of getting on board and then feeling comfortable moving into positions. So it's the board's choice to the extent that right now it indicates you're supposed to elect a secretary, chair, vice chair. But at any point, if you wanted to update your rules and eliminate that, that would certainly be an option for you.
Is the and you'll have to remind me, is the term, the number of years in a term, is that in our rule or statute?
That's in statute.
Okay, so we can't change that.
No.
If it turned out to be a better deal, more convenient for us. So that's okay. Thank you. We will need to move on and make a decision on what to do and or whatever. So unless there's any more discussion, are we ready for some kind of a motion to proceed with XYZ or ABC? Tom, looks like you have your hand up.
Yeah, I'm just going to do this one at a time. We'll see if it works. I'm trying to help you out here. So I'd like to make a motion for James Struthers as chair.
I second that motion.
Any discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 All not in favor? Okay, motion carries.
All right.
Tom, are you ready for the next one?
Well, I'll let the next board member go. I guess what I really need is clarification, Kathy, that you want to not be nominated. Is that correct? So we would go maybe to the next person in the line. Is that my understanding of your request?
Yes. My 4 years is up. Sherry, you can help me. I think I attend the June meeting and then I'm done. And I don't intend to renew for a second four-year term, so I wouldn't be eligible to serve as an officer. I don't mind being an officer, it's just I won't be here.
Sure. And then I guess Carla and Casey, I know Carla, you have served as an officer before. I'm not sure that Casey has, and so I would ask the two of you to flip a coin, or do you have a preference, or any dialogue or discussion there?
I am certainly happy and willing to serve as nominated. My question would be, as the ex officio member on the board without a term limit, is there any restriction or advantage or in terms of timing of when I serve or how I serve in an officer role?
No.
In a sense, there's no restriction. And you know, one of the interesting things, you don't currently have a public member. Your public member can also serve in all of the positions. So, right. Yeah, absolutely no restrictions there, Casey. And in the past, I know the ex officio has chaired this committee or this board at various times in the past as well. So.
Okay. So before we move on and someone declares a motion, If you would humor me and allow me to ask for a motion, that'd be great. I wasn't sure that we were totally ready for that just yet. So if we are ready for doing the actual election, it doesn't sound like we really settled anything other than going back to the charter and either approving what's there or not. So that's another, that's later in the agenda, but okay. Do I hear a motion to nominate or do I hear a nomination for vice chair?
I nominate Casey for vice chair.
I second.
Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? All right, thank you. Motion carries. Congratulations, you two. All right, secretary. Who does nothing? Who wants to have enough? Anyway, yeah, do I hear a motion for, not a motion, do I hear a nomination for secretary?
I'd be happy to make a motion to nominate Carla for secretary.
Carla? This is Kathy. I would second that motion.
Okay. All right. All in favor, say aye. Carla for secretary.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Smile, Carla. Come on.
You can pay me back later, Carla.
That's right. Opposed? Any opposed? All right, Carla, congratulations. All right, moving on. Thank you, everybody, for the discussion. It was good. Sounds like we just have to get some details hammered out on next year and how we do this and or whether we want to consider removing secretary as a an elected office position. So I think we're done with that. So let's move on to 2.2, ASBOG committee member request. Deb, you're up.
All right. Thanks, Eileen. So the 2022 ASBOG committee on nominations is looking for two subject matter experts. They're looking for the experts who are currently serving on a member board to serve along with their past president, Jason Patton, and the other two active presidents. So the SMEs representing the member boards will be involved in the selection of the secretary for the 2023 executive committee. So ASBOG has sent us a request asking for names of interested board members. They like those interested board members' names by March 31st to start facilitating the committee in April. So I think we've heard from Carla and Eileen that you would both be interested if no one else is, but I don't want to put you on the spot. So do we have any other interest?
Oh, I was just going to say, I think maybe you're getting this confused with some other ASBOG stuff.
All right. Well, there seems to be a lot of ASBOG asks, so that is possible.
I don't think we've talked about this specific ask before.
No, we haven't. Carla's right.
It's not typically been something that, from what I understand, has been an outreach thing for ASBOG, for the nominations committee. It's often been more of an invited sort of thing. So it sounds like this year it's a little bit different.
They did this last year or 2 years ago, and I think Tom sat on the committee.
I was on it last year. I just don't remember that it was... whatever, there was more than two people to serve with the past president and active president. It just seems like four people on the nominations committee just seems a little different this year than a larger committee. That's all I'm saying is it just seems like there's something different, which is fine. I don't care. I'm just saying it's different. So anybody interested in serving on the nominations committee? It's an interesting experience. Carla? Tom's done it. I've done it.
Maybe we can let Sherry know. Maybe we don't need to let her know right this minute. Maybe we can let her know in the next, month if anybody's interested. And if anybody has any questions about what it means to be on the nominations committee, let Sherry know. And Tom and Eileen can provide some information.
So I do have a question in just reading the request. Is ASVOG looking for nominations and they're going to select two people from like across the country to sit on this? Or are they looking for two names from Washington to sit on this committee? I'm unclear on that.
I think it's two from across the nation to serve with the three past active ASBOG past presidents that are already on the committee. And I think they just pick two based on, I don't know. Did you have to provide any information, Eileen?
No.
So I think they just pick it based on geography. I think they try to just get a wide range of representation from across the country, from across the member states.
Yeah, it's just to help with reviewing the applications for the executive committee and discussing it as a committee, your recommendations. It's kind of based on a point system, sort of, or it has been. Who knows what they're doing this year, but there's a method to the madness. Yeah. So that's what it would be, to volunteer to be as part of the committee to help elect a new officer to the executive committee of ASBOG. So, and the other one, let's see, are we talking about the Council of Examiners? Yeah, I don't, that's a separate thing. Carla's right, it is from this. And both Carla and I have expressed interest in attending, and I don't know if we are sending anyone this year or how many or whatever, but Tom, your hand's up.
Yeah, as it pertains to the nominating committee, if no one else wants it, or if Casey's not interested, I want to make sure everyone has a chance at this. But if no one else is interested, I'm happy to do it again.
Thank you, Tom. All right. Any more discussion on this? I'm going to ask staff, are we able to financially with a budget send two people to the Council of Examiners in spring 2022. Well, I'm not understanding what we're doing.
So here's a couple of points. One, it sounds like on this particular issue, is volunteering to have his name submitted for this issue. The Council of Examiners is not this, and I think that's the point that Deb was thinking got these cross-wired on. And at this time, we're still trying to get budget information out of the budget office, and I don't have a lot of confidence in exactly where our budget is at. So I don't think this is a good time to send folks to the Council of Examiners. We'll get some more detail as we move forward. The budget office has lost their budget people that support our budgets. That was lost in December, and so it's not clear where it is, and I think we'd be best off waiting till the fall to go ahead and do the Council of Examiners again at that time.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I really wanted to hear was yes or no. Yeah. We can. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm a huge proponent of making sure this board is always represented, as all of our boards, with those national things, because, you know, quite honestly, I don't know a lot about geology clear because Sherry put in the agenda, the mistitling of the hydrogeology symposium. I actually wrote it. That's my word. And so clearly I don't understand your field real well, but I just have always felt that Washington has some real unique geographic features, and the involvement of this board on those national events is really important, so that the geology of Washington, of the Northwest, is really represented when you're looking at some of those things. So yeah. So there's my confession on the agenda.
Thank you, Rick, for fessing up.
and thanks for helping me out there, Rick, because yes, I did. What happens when you go through your emails and you just, you know, do a search for ASBOG? I get about 100 emails that come up. And so I just went, oh, well, it looked like Eileen and Carla had said they were interested. So I don't know why we're talking about this still, but yes, thank you. All right.
Well, thank you.
So we've got Tom's name to put forward. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Tom. All right. Any more on this? I think we've pretty much beat that horse. All right, moving on, 2.3, Washington State Hydrogeology Symposium in May 2022. I Googled that last night, both on different, you know, search engines, both at home and at work, and I couldn't find anything online about the 2022 symposium. So can we have some clarification on this?
Yeah, I think in discussions with Bob Mitchell, that I had when I introduced this, I think at the last board meeting, Bob was proposing that. Bob is a former geology board member, chair, as well as a professor at Western Washington University, and a big proponent and supporter of the Hydrogeology Symposium. I also served on the planning committee for that body at one point. So, I think what we're looking for here is just some feedback, whether any board members wish to be part of the panel discussion on licensing. And I can ask Bob to provide some more detail there prior to, of course, the May meeting. But that's what I know. So Carla might have more information.
Carla, your hand's up. Go ahead.
Yeah. I just put a link to the event website in the chat, so you can find it there. It was my understanding, and I haven't talked to Bob, obviously, but a couple of the people that work at my firm are on the planning committee. It was my understanding that they did away with the panel, with the licensing panel. But I had reached out to Sherry, I don't know, like a month ago to see if we were still planning to have a presence there. I'm planning to attend, and I mostly reached out to see if I needed to be there in some sort of official capacity or could be there in some sort of official capacity as a representative of the board, if there was any way to do that. But yeah, I think that the panel thing went away.
Yeah, thanks, Carla, for that update. And I have served as a geology board member at the Hydro Symposium. We've had a booth there before. And I helped stand around the booth and encourage people to consider licensing. So I would imagine that would be also available to you if that's still within the budget.
Kathy, go ahead.
Hi. I think I would certainly be willing to also go down and help staff an exhibit that we could have present. And I guess the question is, financially, can we afford that?
Yeah, and again, this is something that, as in the packet information there, traditionally this is something that the board has participated and participated at the level that it essentially has purchased an exhibitor booth space, which gives us one admission, and then we've typically purchased one additional one for the $150. I've never attended. Tom can probably give a better perspective. I'm picturing that there must be breaks throughout the symposium, and during that time, folks will wander out to a refreshment area where essentially we've had a table, and I don't know if we've ever had handouts, but I think that's where board members have kind of congregated to share licensure information with folks. Because we've historically done this and it's a relatively low cost and pretty set, I think absolutely, I feel real comfortable that we could make that happen if board members want to. And so to do that, if you want it, Sherry can actually send in the registration and do that. But we'd probably want one person on the board to be kind of the point person that will coordinate the setting up of the table and any dynamics to make sure that it's staffed, so to speak, which may be either from the couple admissions that we have, or if some of you are already attending through your work or something, maybe it becomes a larger team of folks that can rotate through that staffing of the table. So, but it has been a long, I remember most years, it seems like the geologist board has signed up for this symposium, although I don't get the title of it right.
I would definitely be interested in helping out with the booth, the table. But Tom, your hand's up.
Yeah, just my previous experience is that we actually had administrative staff help as well, because I think there is a, I want to say a, some sort of backdrop, if you will, that has already been created. And they were materials that we did hand out about licensing, how to get licensed, you know, what are, I think it was like a frequently asked questions kind of thing on licensing. So there, I think there were materials that were generated at the last symposium that we could use, as well as the conference backdrop that was created. So just that was my experience, and it really worked well. I plan on going, but I'm going to register sort of through my own process. And but if there needs some help, you know, I can pitch into.
Well, and I know the background that you speak of. I think it's like the pull-up thing. It's probably about 2 feet wide and about 6 feet tall. I think it lives under my desk that I last sat at 2 years ago. And so I believe it should still be there. And I do recall that we printed off some type of handouts or information that Sherry and others can kind of take a look. Those materials would probably be there, that we could get so many copies of that and have that available for someone as well.
Mm-hmm. Carla?
Yeah, I'd be happy to take the lead on making sure things got set up and everything. If staff can figure out what those things are and help me identify them. I can do that.
All right. Thank you, Carla.
Perfect.
Staff is going to figure things out. We have offers of help and maybe some follow-up communications after the meeting. We'll settle how that's all going to be done and who can help out with that. So anything else on this topic?
And so I anticipate we'll coordinate with Carla on the specific details, make sure that materials and things like that, we can coordinate that and get
it registered. All right, thank you.
You betcha.
All righty. All set, Carla. Sort of. Okay, moving right along. Let's get into old business 3.1, review the master action items list. Sherry, this is all yours.
All right. So so the first one is exam committees to meet and go over exam and question banks. That's still work in progress. So we're working on that. Report back on, that's on hold for the report on Polaris. As Rick mentioned, we don't have a budget person right now. We have some things, but not the specific item that we're looking for here. Travel, it's still on hold for campuses. We're hoping in the spring, but still no news on that yet. So that's tabled. And then the outreach introductory email that was sent out in December, and we had feedback on that. And I think Kathy will update us later on the poster. So this is in the packet, the list of the particular exams. The draft version of the board that's all been worked out. So we did that, and this is, once again, we completed that and mailed it. The org chart, we haven't sent that out yet because we're still working on that with the reorganization or the realignment. We're still working on updating that. Budget office, same, that's on hold. I updated that, and Julia and Rick had the conversation with Mr. Fisher following the last meeting. So a lot of this will come off for the next one. Tom, did you have something?
Just on the travel to campuses, I think that's accurate, but I would say the Department of Ecology is planning to open up its offices March 21st to the public. So I would assume that other state agencies are probably following suit around that same time. So maybe not this spring, but maybe this fall, we could be thinking about trips to college campuses. So that would be my comment.
Thanks, Tom.
One quick follow-up on that, Tom. One of the things that we're looking at in the sense of boards doing a remote board meeting, kind of doing it in person, right? We're doing remotes, right? But the concept of if we go to a campus and we want to do a board meeting there is that we would want to be doing it in a hybrid fashion. And I anticipate the first hybrid meeting we'll probably do it would be in Olympia, where we have total control over the meeting space and those things and be able to understand. The other thing is though, if we wanted to do a campus visit that's not a full board meeting, but possibly an engagement with a class or something, we could certainly look to be doing that that doesn't require the open public meetings requirements of a full board meeting would have. So we could look at a couple options.
Thank you. Jim, your hand's up.
I had a question about the nature of the follow-up with Mr. Fisher. As I recall, he was a person who was asking about how to acquire his experience as a registrant. So I was wondering if you guys had kind of a briefing of the nature of that conversation. It is something that comes up pretty commonly.
Let me go find some notes while we're meeting here and see if I can give you a follow-up before the end of the meeting.
Sure. All right. Thank you. Anything else on the action items?
Just on that last one that Mr. Fisher inquired, it may be one that I was engaged in as it relates to a person who had worked for an organization that didn't have a registered or licensed geologist, but was seeking, trying to get experience under a licensed geologist. And I think the direction was that often, at least in our case, you know, ecology has often sometimes provided that service to other agencies for employees who are trying to get that experience. If I recall this incident correctly, that was the recommendation that I'd made. If I was the one that was supposed to follow up on that, that's what I remember. So I see Sherry smiling at me, but I think that's what that was about.
Does that help, Jim? Is that?
Yeah, it does. It's just a common recurring thing that I get questioned about. It's particularly for geologists that work in engineering firms, is how they acquire that experience, whether they're supposed to go to an outside entity and have kind of an understudy type experience, or what their options are. It seems the WAC and the way the law's written, there's not a lot of a great deal of flexibility in that area.
And Jim, I would say with across all the boards we work with, that is one of the challenges with this particular board and that particular license. And I think it's exactly that, where you have folks who are geologists working in an engineering firm and they're like the only geologist there, right? Whereas more typically an engineer is working in an engineer firm and get experience under an engineer, an architect, those type of things. So it does create a challenge. And I would say it's a common question, like you say, that staff get trying to figure out how somebody can get verified in their experience. And several of you have been involved in that verification process, trying to determine if a verifier is qualified to actually verify experience and stuff. So there's no doubt it's one of the challenges of this field and that license.
Is there anything we can do to reduce that challenge? Is there something that this group, this board would like to do to offer up a white paper, a policy, whatever?
Well, you know, it interesting dynamic. It's quite a few years ago now, but one of the things the board was really interested in doing was to simplify a couple of education requirements. And really was going in the direction thinking that they could do experience in lieu of education, only to get to the point to realize that the education requirement they were trying to substitute experience with was in RCW, right? And so to the extent that any of the requirements are in RCW, the board is very, very limited in what you can and can't do. To the extent that any of the requirements are in WAC, absolutely the board could look at exploring some alternative ways to do that. You know, and it's interesting. I say that it's a common thing within this field, but it's not like everybody comes to us. And I'd be hard pressed to understand like what percentage of applicants struggle with this. Is it like 5% or is it 45%? No clue on that as to really how much it is. It just stands out as a unique struggle that we have with this licensing group over other ones.
But it does occur more than once a year.
Yeah.
Yes. Twice a year.
Probably.
10 times a year.
No, that's probably too many.
Okay. So it's really, the question again is it something that we need to better describe that would help with this? So that's just my question to the group. Kathy, your hand was up next.
Yeah, I see we have Star on the call. So she might be able to tell us a little bit more how often this comes up.
Hi, this is Star. I want to say, I don't think it's that, I mean, it's often, I want to say it's often-ish, right? But I don't think it's that many licensees that end up in this situation where they're asking it. And then I'm reaching out to the board members. I could probably do some research and figure out really kind of like what that might look like based on how many emails I've had to send out to everybody. But I do feel like several of the licensees do get a little bit confused about that experience requirement, the overlap between the engineering, as well as even just the where it mentions like the 3 years under a PG are required, then they think that the other 2 years can be under anybody else. So I feel like that kind of comes up more often than the crossover between the profession, you know, the engineering geology and the specialty. I do feel like there could be some improvements. I would just have to maybe, you know, look at it and type up something and get it over where I could feel like it would make sense, if that helps.
Yeah, I would think that would help. This comes up. I mean, we've struggled with this for years. It does come up. It's going to continue. If it's apparently unique or almost unique to this board, we need to be more clear in our messaging, whether it's in rule or something that on, you know, our application information on the website, whatever. But I would really appreciate if you could take a look at that, see kind of how often we've been dealing with this, say, in the past 5 years or something. Pick a time frame that makes sense to you. And so we can stop having this conversation and having to stop, you know, challenging staff and board members with trying to figure out on an individual basis frequently, whatever that means.
And we can make this an agenda, you know, item at the something. Next board meeting. We can do a little bit of research for you and get some of that background, how much, how often, what those details are. And so at least it could be a healthy conversation at the next board meeting as to trying to determine a direction to go if a correction needs to be made.
Please do. Please add it to our next board meeting and with the request to do look into the numbers and potential ways that we can improve our messaging. So
perfect.
Thank you. Casey, your hand's up.
Yeah, thank you, Eileen. In my mind, and I don't know if we can get into this in the numbers, but there's two kind of broad buckets. One of them is applicants that are in Washington that maybe just have a misunderstanding of who needs to be the verifier, and they, you know, ask their kind of their team lead or something like that, who may be an engineer. But there are licensed geologists that work where they work, and presumably they're being mentored by those people, and it's just a matter of communicating who's the appropriate verifier in that case. That seems like one bucket to me. And then another bucket is that's more challenging in my opinion is applicants that are looking for reciprocity or coming from different states that may not have geologist licensure, or, you know, have different rules around it. And so specifically, are the geologist in an engineering firm and haven't had that work under a licensed geologist? I hope we can in some way tease that nuance out a little bit and not just put them all in one bucket and say this is the number of people that are encountering this issue, because they're kind of distinct subsets in my mind.
Thank you. Got that, Star? Thank you. All right, anybody else on this? All right, any more on any of the action items? Okay, hearing nothing, let's move on to complaint cases for review. I understand there are none. All right. Thank you, Sherry. Number five, legal issues for deliberation. I also see that there are none. Is that correct? You're on mute, Sherry, but I can see your head nodding.
Correct.
Can...
Yeah. Sorry.
That's all right. All right. Disciplinary and investigation reports. Item number 6-1, disciplinary cases report. Deb?
Thanks, Eileen. It looks like we have two disciplinary cases since January 2021 to the present. So of those two cases, Carla was the case manager on one, and it looks like it was closed with no action as it was unsubstantiated. And then the other was closed with no formal action because they either complied or the complaint was withdrawn. So that is it.
All right, thank you. Any comment or questions? Okay, hearing none, well, let's move right on to 7, Assistant Attorney General's report. I understand that's also a none. Sherry, can you confirm?
Elizabeth might have an update on, she might have something to report here.
Yeah, somebody had asked earlier in the meeting about if there's anything new to report on the engineering, use of the term engineering case. And nothing further has happened on that case, and nothing further has happened as far as legislation goes. They're kind of working on legislation for 2023. Oh, wait a minute. And also, there was the, I think somebody asked actually about the AGO opinion and whether that had been completed on who can stamp and sign engineering documents versus architecture documents. I think somebody might have asked about that. I'm not sure, but no progress on that either. So nothing has happened in any of those areas, but I will keep you posted at the next meeting. Hopefully we'll have more news.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. I know I had requested forwarding of the Oregon Board's newsletter, which had a front page discussion on this. So hopefully you're all able to look at that for another state's perspective on the same issue involving the same parties, pretty much. So I hope you all got a chance for that to look at it. So thank you, Elizabeth. Any questions for Elizabeth on this? Looks like, Jim, you got your hand up.
Yeah, so what are you mentioned some legislation that's moving forward. What are the broad contours of that? And how does it remedy this situation?
So again, I'm not, that there's still a little disagreement within the board, but I think what the governor's office, and state agencies would like to see is that the board, only regulates certain use of certain terms, such as professional engineer in this case, and, civil engineer. So really limiting the scope of the use of the regulated terms, and allowing people to use the term engineer in a more, in a broader basis. So, I don't know if that makes, if I answered that question.
Yeah.
So that's the way they're going. But, so the way that the court had said, what the court had said was, you can't use the term engineer, just in any situation if the firm or organization performs engineering services, which was going to make the state agencies and Boeing, I'm not sure Boeing because they're a corporation, but at least state agencies would have to change a lot of their job titles.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Anybody else? Any more? I think this is a topic where we just can say stay tuned, right? So there will be more on this in the future. Okay, hearing no more comments or questions on this topic, let's move forward to 8, Committee Task Force Reports. 8.1 is about the charter. I would request that we table the motion for approval of this. It sounds like there needs to be some more editing done in the elections section. So I will admit that I didn't get Elizabeth's comments until about a week or two ago. So so sorry that it didn't get out to you sooner, but here's another opportunity to take a look at it. And so if you wouldn't mind putting down your ideas, comments, and sending them in to Sherry, that'd be great. Hopefully we'll be able to review this again in June. And then Jim, if you would take management of that discussion then, that'd be great. Carla, go ahead.
Can we get board staff to send out the Word version of the current draft charter after this meeting?
Oh, yeah, definitely. PDF is very difficult to work with for editing. Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much. Good point. Okay, moving on to 8.2, student outreach. I want to say that staff did a really good job of reaching out to various universities and got some feedback, which is great. I got more feedback than I had expected. I anticipated a lot of the email communications would just go into the trash pile. But so there is an updated student outreach or college outreach matrix available. I don't think it was sent out to the board as part of this meeting, but it exists. And we're still working on it and trying to improve it. It's getting better all the time. That's all I've got to say about student outreach in the last 3 months. So, Kathy, did you have anything to add, any activities or any comments?
No, the only other thing I would say is I really like what Sherry did with the outreach table. So she separated it out into different tabs so that we can see 4-year schools versus 2-year versus those that don't have geology programs. So that's a really wonderful.
I did that, but okay.
Oh, hey, that was great, Eileen. And I have to also agree that we got a lot more feedback than I anticipated as well.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a lot of universities, colleges, whatever, in the state, but only a few of them might be interested in communications from us. That's understood. Yeah. Any questions on student outreach activities at this time or recommendations?
There is one more update, Eileen. Sorry. The poster is not ready for everybody's comment, so I'll try to get that as my last act out to you all before I go off the board.
Thank you. Last hurrah. Yeah.
We'd
appreciate seeing that. Thanks so much for working on that. All right, let's move on to 9, a board executive's report, 9.1 program operations. Deb, take it away.
Thanks, Eileen. Sorry, I'm scribbling notes to myself here so that we'll make sure to follow up on things. Okay, so let's talk about some of the statistics here. We have reports that Darla, who's not on the call, I don't think Darla's on the call, has graciously pulled for us. So it looks like currently we have 1,811 active geologists. She breaks it down by age group as well. So you can see that demographic. And we have 28. Oh, you are on the call, Darla. Okay. If we've got questions, Darla is on the call. canceled. We have 28 canceled status. Expired are 422. We have inactive 7. And that retired status that we've been discussing, we have 25 retired licensees. And the geologist